Well, thanks for having me all the way from Australia. And it's a real privilege. Yeah, do you need an interpreter, basically? But let me tell you, it's a real group privilege to be with you because, you know, you're the unsung heroes, to be honest. I just come up here as a senior pastor to tell you what City Hope Church is going to do. But when I look down there, I see my program director for our care arm, Naomi, and she really does it all. And I wish she was up here actually telling you what to do because she's my hero. She really is. Do you know, if I could pray for a gift, do you know what it would be? The gift of hindsight? No, I'm serious. I'm going to give you the gift of hindsight today because I reckon if I was a young pastor, and I've been in ministry now, I've been senior pastor of City Hope Church for 27 years. I reckon if I gave you this talk 27 years ago, it'd be absolute rubbish. It really will be. It really would be. So I'm going to give you hindsight of what I've learnt about community ministry over 27 years. Is that okay? And to do that, I've got to tell you my story. I've got to tell you where I came from and where I've been and some of the things that have really influenced me in relation to the city of Ipswich, which just for your reference is about 185,000 people. We're a provincial city. We're an hour away from Brisbane. Unfortunately, we're really a suburb of Brisbane, but no Ipswichite would ever say that. But that's the size that we've got. We're 185,000. So I'm going to tell you about my story and how I got to be where we are. Now, I don't want you to throw stones at me, but before I was a senior pastor, I was a lawyer. Now, I've heard all the lawyer jokes, all right? When I go into the foyer, I don't want to hear them. I've heard them all. None of them are funny, I must admit. But it did influence the way I probably think. When I was a lawyer, I can remember being asked to be senior pastor of the church. And I honestly, I can say this. I remember dealing with the call of God in my life and what it would mean to come from law to the church. And I struggled with that, and I cried out to God. Now, that's really code for this. I was going to get paid a lot less. So how did I deal with the salary adjustment? That's really what it was all about, to be honest. But I also remember saying this, and I'm sure God has never heard this prayer before. I'm sure I'm the only one that's ever uttered it. But I can remember coming before God and saying, God, I just don't want to play church. I want to do something significant. I want to make a difference. You know, thinking that God was the, you know, God had only heard that on one occasion from Mark Edwards 27 years ago. But believe it or not, I think God still answers that prayer. I think he answers a prayer of the heart of community people that are saying, yeah, we don't want to play church. We actually want to make a difference in our community. And I remember the day like it was yesterday. And I'm almost emotional about it, to be honest. Where I was doing my devotions, praying that prayer. God, you know, if we're going to do anything in this city, can we do something that really makes a difference? And I remember reading Hebrews 11. And I'm getting inspired by all these great heroes of faith and daring to believe that I might do something like them. What an arrogant position, if I really think about it now. But I just wanted to do something for God so desperately. And I came to verse 33, this really interesting verse which said this, by faith they overcame kingdoms and put justice into practice. Now, for the majority of you in this room, you probably would not read that like an ex-lawyer reads it. That is a lawyer's dream. That does not mean what it says. But with my legal training, I looked at that and it leapt out and grabbed me by the heart. Because what it actually means is this. Kingdoms does not mean nations. All right, doesn't mean we're going to subdue nations or change nations. It actually means this, that you're going to change the culture of that nature, of that nation. You're going to change the culture. And justice means you're going to do something right in the place of a wrong. So all of a sudden, that defined the way I'm going to do community for the next 27 years. I didn't know that at the time. So can I really challenge you that if you're going to do any community ministry, you should have a foundation that is rock-like. You've got to have a foundation that says, okay, when all the ideas come to me, and as a senior pastor, I've had a few ideas over 27 years come to me, then my filter is, does it change the culture of our community and does it right a wrong in the community? Because here's what culture is, and I don't want to get too complicated, but you've got to understand this. A culture is an integrated set of values and traditions and customs and beliefs and methods and attitudes which result in an action. So I want to change the traditions that are going on in my city. I want to change the customs that are going in my city. I want to change the beliefs and the methods and the attitudes. And I want to do that by doing something that will right some of the wrong customs, attitudes, traditions, methods, and thinking. Now, I give you that because I filter everything through that. So what was I going to do? Could I even do this as a community? Could I do this in my community? And I'm honest about this because I didn't want to do anything. Because as soon as I became senior pastor, there was 100 ideas sitting on my desk. And there was a lineup of 60 people wanting to do them. And I didn't have a brass razoo. I didn't even have an idea how to do it. I wasn't well known in the community, although I was known, but not well known. So I had to start to think, you know, could I find something that the church would do that would change the culture and right a wrong?
So good.
That's the way I look at it. Could I find something that was so entrenched in my community that it was a value that was wrong or was not working or was hurting people and change it to produce a different action? Yeah. So that effectively meant my ability to serve my community through changing culture, listen to this please, was not based upon how much I was going to do as a church, but what I did as a church. I don't think you got it, so I'm just going to give it to you again. I was not going to do a whole heap. I was just going to do what would change the culture. You see, the first thing I learned was be careful you don't do so much in your community that it spreads your church so thin you just don't do it well. So I had to come to the conclusion that I couldn't do anything. I couldn't do everything. I was going to pick certain things that fitted that criteria, only a few things, but I was really going to do them well. And I was going to have that effect if I could. And that meant that I was not going to do everything, but I was going to do certain things that changed the culture in my community. Now, before I give you the very specifics of how we did that, can I just tell you, that this is not idealistic thinking. It's not thinking that, you know, some guy from Australia has just come over and said, let's do it. This is actually what happened in the early church. We just don't realize it because we don't study it. You see, do you realize that the early church was known as a, well, for want of a better word, an organization that changed the culture of a Roman Empire? That's why Jesus was saying a seed dropped into culture. A seed that's dropped in. Christianity was merely just a seed in those times. But listen to what the historians say the early church did in the Roman Empire in those days. Definitively, recorded by historians. They made a decision to use the finances of the church to buy back slaves and redeem them and set them free. No one else was doing that. Now, can I tell you, for the slave, that was a change of culture, but also righted a wrong. In addition to that, they actually cared for the poor, where in the Roman Empire, the poor were left to die. They brought the poor in. But not only that, they took another step. They actually risked their lives to care for those who had contagious diseases, for example, leprosy, when no other organization did, to the point that the third century emperor, Philip, said this: why do these Christians care for our people better than we do? Do you know what my heart is? That we as a church care for these people more than society does.
So good.
Christianity was regarded by historians in those centuries as being a culture changer. And it was also, please listen to this, it was said by historians to put the soul back into the Roman Empire. I wonder if I could put the soul back into my community. When I can tell you it's definitively being lost sometimes. So I'm just going to give you three things we did and how we did it. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Then you can ask me as many questions as you like. So my journey starts. So how does a church change the culture of community? Well, the first thing is credibility is everything. Credibility is the state of trust that the community has for you and your church. Please do not estimate that. So when you start on this journey, can I tell you how much credibility you should assume you have? None. In fact, assume that they are hostile towards you. In Australia, we've had something called the Royal Commission into Institutionalised Child Abuse. Every single day for 3 years, and that is no exaggeration, the Royal Commission was giving publicity to every newspaper and every television station in Australia saying that we're all pedophiles. No, I'm sorry, they did that. Conversations changed dramatically about the church since that day. So I haven't got any credibility. I haven't got any. And way back 27 years ago, believe me, the church was not regarded highly in the city. So how did I build credibility? Now, this is my journey. It might not be yours. But what I decided to do was, you know what? I'm going to find positions in the community to serve on. I'm just going to serve on them. I'm just going to turn up or get involved, and I'm going to serve on them and see if I can gain credibility for the church and credibility for me. So I served on the management committee of Lifeline. I chaired the Ipswich Independent Youth Service. I chaired the Family Resource Centre. I became the first clergy in Australia to become president of the Chamber of Commerce. First clergy. They even let me say grace at breakfast. That was a breakthrough. You know, I chaired the University of Queensland Ipswich campus. I was the first non-doctor to become the chairman of St Andrew's Hospital Board. I was also involved in the ethics committee for the Ipswich area. Every ethical question had to be determined in the health area. I was on that committee. And I also then chaired the Domestic and Family Violence Task Group. And as a result of that, and I just want you to hear this, not from an arrogant point of view, but what it did for credibility. 3 years ago, I was awarded the Order of Australia, which is the highest civilian order in Australian life. And I say that to say this, that credibility really matters when you're going to start to do stuff. And what that did, and I want to really encourage you to hear this, is that by serving on those committees and, you know, in some cases chairing them, what it did was it built relationships with potential and eventual very influential people in the community. See, 27 years ago, some of the people I served with were just nobodies. Now they're very much some people who have hold great influence. It's amazing what time does to people. They just go up the food chain in the community. So people that I was on a Lifeline committee with 27 years ago, they're now the local politician. They're the head of this organisation. The second thing it did is it put my competence and my values and my heart on display, especially my competence. In other words, they learned to trust me because I was competent, hopefully. They saw my heart, they saw my values. Yeah. So therefore, in times when I'm going to tell you about what we had to do, when I came to them, they said, yeah, we can trust you because we've seen the way you operate. And it allowed me, the third thing, was to see the real needs in the community. Oh boy, I saw the needs. So I didn't have to have people come to me and please hear my heart, they will, but I didn't have to have them because I was seeing them. I could see the needs. And it also built trust for future partnerships. So when I had to go and ask for stuff, they knew me. So do you understand this process took a lot of time, a lot of energy, and there was very little fruit. Yeah. I didn't think there was any fruit, but now I look back and see the incredible way that someone's gift makes way for itself. Yeah. We also did events that were specifically targeted to build credibility with very specific organisations. So one thing we did was we did a day of honour. We're in our 18th year of doing that, where we honour all the police, all the fireys, all the ambulance, all the rural fire brigades and all the SES. And we've done that for 18 years. We just bring them in and we honour them. And they won't miss it now. We give every single one of them a gift. Last year, we had 275 of them in the building. Now, I'm telling you, that's 275 people who do not normally go to church. Yep. It puts a dent in your praise and worship, but you can handle it. Now, can I tell you, that has opened relationships with the police and the paramedics and other organisations that I could not have dreamed about. When I go to the police now, and you're going to see a video a little bit later, they don't say, who are you? They say, what can we do to help? And sincere, because for 18 years, I've had them on the platform of a church saying how much I love them and appreciate them and honour them.
So
it's taken work. We have the largest RAF base in Australia outside our church, in our city. So, you know, we've been doing Anzac services, and I'm telling you, we do them amazingly because I'm trying to reach someone in this RAF base. And only this last Sunday, we had the third highest Air Force officer in Australia come and do an interview with me. Now, I am absolutely believing that's going to lead to something. I got no idea what it is, but I know it's going to lead to something. So my aim in doing this was simply this. When City Hope was mentioned, I want you to think about this for your church. When City Hope was mentioned and I was mentioned, I wanted the community to think really well of us rather than say, oh, church. That was my aim. That was my aim. I want to ask you a question. What are you doing to increase the credibility of your church in your community? Because if you think you can waltz in there and say, okay, what's the latest idea and are we going to do it, the community will not just laugh at you, they'll throw a stone at you. So we built years, and my staff are still involved in this. So I just want to encourage you. Come on, we can do credibility, but it's going to take a lot of hard work. I love the way Rich Wilkinson said this morning, we want to live our lives by an Instagram-type speed. Can I tell you, I've discovered that community life and community doing stuff is really long, hard slog. It's long. You agree? I mean, come on, give me something. I reckon it's long and it's hard. So we put a lot of effort in, but it's paid off. The second thing I learned about community, then I'm going to come to the specifics if that's okay. The second thing about community was simply this. The care arm of the church must never be adjunct to the church. It has to be the heart of the church. But listen to me, community, wonderful people. This is a senior pastor talking. It can't wag the tail of the dog either. Do you know what I mean? It can't be the tail that wags the dog. Oh, you loved me up until that point, didn't you? You see, I've been in churches where the community arm actually believes that they love their community more than I do as a senior pastor. Well, you, Mark, you don't love, you know, you get on the university board, but you're not with the poor. Yeah, well, maybe I'm better off as an ex-lawyer being on a university board than being with the poor sometimes. And you're also saying, I've not been with the poor. That's a false statement because you don't know what I'm doing. So I'm just going to say it as it is, because what happens is that effectively, it's got to be in the heart of the senior pastor. If not, then conflict starts to occur between the person leading the care arm and the senior pastor. And you know what? I don't want that to happen. So during the time that I'm establishing credibility in the community, I'm also creating culture in the church that the care arm is the heart of the church. So how am I doing that? Well, as a senior pastor, I'm preaching it and I'm teaching it. I'm modeling it personally. But I'm assuring that the staff of the care arm know that.
Great.
I'm going to resource them. I'm going to love them. I'm going to encourage them. But I've got to let them know, hey, I have to think of other things other than the care arm. I know it's a shock to them that I don't wake up in the morning every morning and say, now, how can I bless the care arm today? Because I've just probably got a building program and finances and budgets and an elders meeting and a million other things. But that doesn't mean I don't love and care for them. And I am not their strongest advocate. I am. So therefore, what did we do? Well, the third thing was we identified the need in the community. Now listen to the proviso that no one else was engaged in. Now remember I said we can't do everything? We're going to do a few things. So through the filter of changing culture, I started to say to our staff, what is no one else doing? What is no one else doing? And I've got to tell you, that's a really tough question, because if they're not doing it, do you know why they're usually not doing it? Because it's really tough. Yeah. It's really, really tough. But I knew that I wasn't going to do a lot. I was only going to do a little, really well, a little in terms of quantity, the number of things, but I'm going to do them really well. But all of a sudden I discovered the reason why people weren't doing some of the things we were doing, guess why? It's because it was just hard. And the reason other churches weren't doing it was it's really tough. So we've done a lot of things over 27 years, but can I tell you the things we're doing right now? All right, here's how practically we found out. The first thing that we do is we do a feeding of the homeless program once a week. We feed the homeless. Now, why do we do that? Because there's a real homelessness problem in Ipswich, and we partner with a whole lot of other organisations to do it on the other nights. But boy, do we provide good food. We've had in the past, and still do, I think, to a degree, we have a chef come in to do some of the food. I mean, you know, you want to eat at this place. You want to eat at the park that night. And because of the community involvement, I had a barber recently just come to me only last week and say, I have two colleagues who want to come to your barbecue in the park where you feed the homeless. We're going to provide them with professional hair care and haircuts every single week. I said, what about me? You can do me anytime. So, you know, again, how did I find out about that need? I found out because the mayor of the city said, we've got a problem with homelessness. Now, you can't fix homelessness. I don't even begin to believe I can fix homelessness, but I knew that I had to do this because the mayor asked me. Now, I'm prepared to say no to the mayor, believe me, but I just felt it was going to lead to something else. So the second thing we do, and we do this incredibly well for our communities, is we do hampers of hope. I've got some photos of a Hampers of Hope. We put together Hampers of Hope that you wouldn't believe, which is similar to your Christmas boxes. But we partner with 60 organisations in Ipswich. Now, can I tell you, I don't think there's many more. We partner with 60 organisations, all right? And those organisations actually love us. So there's some of the packing, there's some of the boxes. And you've got to see, the week that we distribute them, 60 organisations come in with their clients. So good. It is the most emotional thing I've ever seen. And we do this every Christmas. And the church just gets behind it. This year, it probably cost us as a church well over $250,000. And we're investing that in the community. And it's just a brilliant program. Can I tell you, it's a brilliant program. And that has led to so many other things take place. But the main thing we do is this. The main thing we do is our third thing, and that's what Scott's asked me to talk about, is we actually do domestic and family violence pacts. I want to tell you a bit about that. But before I do, all right, let me tell you what it is first before I show you something. Do you know, I cannot fix domestic and family violence. I can't. I just can't. I would imagine the problem is as big in New Zealand as it is in Australia. Now, I was asked by the local politician, local member of parliament, to head up the family and domestic violence task group. So for 18 months, I led this thing. And we had the best meetings. Can I tell you? We met for 4 hours. And we met. And we met. And we met. And we met. And we had workshops. And we had everything. After 18 months, I thought, this is absolute. And every time we met, we got a photo taken, and it was in the paper. And I'm standing there like this. I'm thinking, we're not doing anything. So I thought, what can we do? So rather than have a bad attitude, which I did have for probably 17 of the 18 months, I started to listen, what could we do? And this is what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that 85% in our city of, let me just say women, and please don't throw stones at me with men because there's not too many of them, But 85% of women who leave a domestic or family violence situation go back to that violent situation within 48 hours. Is that right? I just thought that's wrong. So I started to ask, you know, a novel question. Why? Why do they go back? And I found out that one of the reasons, now believe me, there is a lot, all right, but one of the reasons was this. They don't have anything with them when they go. So here's what happens. Two police officers turn up at their door. Let me first of all tell you, the police officers do not want to turn up at those things. I know of no police officer, and I've talked to heaps that want to go to a domestic. That's what they call it, a domestic. They hate them. They're the most volatile, dangerous, life-threatening situations. They'd rather face a bank robber with a gun because that's at least predictable. So they walk into this situation. Their only thing they're thinking about is I've got to get that person out straight away. So they get them out and that person has absolutely nothing with them. So they're thrown into emergency accommodation where because of the lack thereof in our city, guess what? They're out of it within about 24 hours. There's nothing there. So I just came up with this idea. And honestly, it was just like that. I think it's a God thing. I said, why don't we provide them with a pack? Why don't we give them something that they could use over that 24-hour, 48-hour period? So we went to all the organisations who then went to people who have been affected by domestic violence and said, what would you put in a pack? We didn't do it. I haven't got a clue. So we've got four sets of packs. One for the woman, one for a teenager, one for, I think it's 10 to 13, and one's a bit younger than that. And we provide things in those packs that are tailor-made for them. Have a look at the video. This is when we launched it.
Such a special moment to witness the happiness, then shock, and then relief on the faces of the women and children that received the kindly donated packs from City Hope Church. The women and the children that receive these packs are amazed and blown away by the generosity of the community.
Video, but that's okay. So don't clap, it's the wrong video. But in the video that's supposed to be played, sorry about that, there's a police officer who's the head of prosecutions. And she comes in and she sits there and she says that, she said, I was a victim of domestic violence. She said, I grew up in a household where I was abused most days. She said, when everyone else was going to the senior prom, I was in police custody being protected by my stepdad. She said, when City Hope did this thing, she said, I got involved. And one of the police officers in our church basically showed me a letter from this prosecution's person, literally telling the whole of the police station, you need to get involved. So we partner with 40 organisations, and this is what these organisations do. They get the packs. We have workplaces all over Ipswich. We have workplaces on the RAF base, which directly came as a result of our Anzac days. We have the police, the fireys, everyone involved. We have schools involved. We have businesses involved, where we just simply say, collect all this material, which we tell you what to do and how to do it. I think this photo is coming up behind me. And then we collect them and we give them to those organisations, particularly the police. And when a woman comes out of that situation, she gets a pack. We've also interviewed those women and they say this, it may not fix the situation, but to get this pack when we leave is the most precious thing. We don't do as much as Carl and Angela, but you know what we do? We feed the homeless. We do them really well. We do it really well. We provide a whole lot of hampers of hope every single Christmas and every week, I might add. And we help victims of domestic and family violence. And I don't know whether we'll do much more. We've got one other thing that we think is a need in our community. But can I just encourage you? Build your credibility. Don't take yourselves too seriously, because the senior pastor does love you, community people. He's just, or she's got many other things on their mind. And then find some things that no one else is doing. Now that, family and domestic violence, has opened doors for us that you would not believe. You would not believe. The Minister for Family and Domestic Violence, who I met with only about 3 weeks ago, looked me in the eye and said, "Why isn't everyone doing this? We'd like to roll this out throughout Queensland." See? Person's gift just makes way for itself. And it's because I sat on a committee board for 17 months till I finally figured we could do something about it. You know what? I honour you. I honour you, community people. Keep your spirit right and remember, remember, we can change the culture of our community by what you do, by righting wrongs that are happening right now. Amen.
How good is that? Meet the needs. Meet the needs. I'm looking at Ned Selway up there, who is part of our team, regional pastor. Him and his wife Bex. Bex works at QES, which is the school that I was referring to just over the street here. Ned and Bex have about 87 hats. One of the hats they wear is they are regional pastors in Otara. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Auckland, Otara is known as an area that does need a lot of community help. There's a lot of community work that goes out there. Ned's got the greatest faith stories I've ever heard. He wanted to start a soup kitchen. So if I got the story right, turned up the council and they gave him a building. The week before, he turned up to some lady's house and asked for a house, and she gave her the house for some family that was out of... If you need anything, just ask Ned. He'll go and get it for you. But we started feeding some people. And before you know it, we're about to start our third soup kitchen this year. Can I be honest? We never had a strategy around that. We said, Ned said, where's the need? And then God breathed on it. And we're about to start in Mangere, which is just over the road here, where there's a whole bunch of organizations that are partnering together to run the soup kitchen. We don't need our name on it. We just need people reached and people helped. And any questions for Mark? Any questions in terms of... I know why you like the four-hour meetings, by the way, because you're a lawyer and you're going to charge for it. You're going to put your timesheet in for it, 4 hours, 15 minutes. At $647 an hour. Well, that's cheap. You're at the community masterclass, mate. These people can feed 800 people for your one hourly rate. Far out. You know how he pays for Hampers of Hope? Just does one day a week in lawyering and good to go. That's how he pays that $250,000. Any. You know what I love about Mark? Is I love the long-term game to become an integral part of his community. That's not a senior pastor role. That's a Christian role. God, where are the connections that you want me to build? Any questions at all for Mark? Yes, ma'am. Great question. Can we get a list of what's in those packs? Naomi, can we get a list of what's in the... Hey, see the lady two rows behind you over there? Now, can we get a list of what's in those packs? Is that possible? There's a photo of two flies. Does that have the list of what's on there? Okay. bourbon, cigarettes. I don't know what else it says. I have no idea. It's Australia, right? Yeah, I know, it's Australia. Yeah, well, I got you. And yes, we can. What we'll do is we'll get that and we'll have printouts tomorrow of that for us, which would be helpful, yeah? So we'll make sure we've got printouts of that. Great question, though. That's awesome. You know what? That is what we want these masterclasses to be. Why should I go and find out what needs to be in a pack? He's done all the work. I'm going to straight steal it. There is copyright. Honestly, there is copyright in the kingdom. The right to copy. Just copy whatever you want. Just honestly, why reinvent the wheel? We know what our commitment here at Life is. Honestly, our commitment is to start as little number of ministries as possible, but release as many people as possible into their area of passion. So that's cool. Any other questions about what Mark said? How I'm so inspired. I want to go and have lunch with a politician or something. You know why? I love what he said. I have lunch with I get to know politicians to find out how to serve them. Did you catch that? The amount of community people that come into our office for what we can do for them, as opposed to what can I do for you? And I reckon that opens so many doors. So many doors. I'm looking at Joan here, who runs our Kiwi Contacts and is passionate about asylum seekers and people coming into our country. We'll turn up most Sundays with a carload of Iranians or Iraqians or everywhere, all over the place. Honestly, she's American. She turns up with Americans sometimes even. But you know what? There are dozens of people in our worlds who have a God-birthed passion to do something. So I want to honor you. I want to honor you for what you do. I want to honor you for the time that you put in, because this is often a behind the scenes and very thankless area. Can you hear from heaven right now? Thank you. Every meal that is given out, every smile that is given out, every hug that is given out, every effort that is gone to, no one on earth may see it, but heaven sees every bit of it. And thank you for being Jesus with skin on. Thank you for answering the call of God on your life that may not be to take a pulpit or a stage, may not be to be a senior pastor of a church. Thank God we've got enough senior pastors. What we need is people. Now, let the senior pastors be senior pastors. I'm not called to be that. But what we need is people to answer the call of God on their life, to meet needs and make a difference wherever you are. Thank you for doing what you do. And as a representative of Life and Pastor Paul and Marie, we honor you. Thank you for doing what you do. We appreciate it. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to have some afternoon tea right now. And we've got some cookies and some soup kitchen stuff out there. Ned's out there. He didn't even laugh because he's talking. He's chatting up the girl next to him. He's still chatting up the girl next to him, which is his wife, by the way. So we've got afternoon tea out there for you. A couple of things. I know that in this masterclass in particular, there are some people who just come for the masterclass. So we have